up high. Give it your best, reach for the sky. This is the youth sports playbook. Having fun is all it took. Run, laugh, learn, and grow. Every step helps you glow.
Welcome back to Youth Sports Playbook, the show where we dive into the real challenges, questions, and opportunities facing young athletes, their families, and the coaches who guide them. I'm your host, Jeffrey Bernstein. If you're enjoying the podcast and want to hear more, please take a moment to like, follow, or subscribe on the platform you're listening on. It really helps us grow and reach more families who care about making youth sports a positive experience for kids. Today, we're tackling a topic that every parent, coach, and athlete needs to understand: concussions in youth sports. Concussions can be tricky. One moment a child is running on the field, the next they take a hard hit and seem fine, but we know that's not always the case. These injuries can affect more than just performance. They can impact focus, memory, schoolwork, and even long-term brain health. And with youth sports evolving and kids playing harder and faster than ever, knowing how to recognize, treat, and prevent concussions is critical. Today, we're talking to Dr. Abigail Fader, a pediatric concussion specialist who has spent years helping kids recover safely and educating families on how to spot early signs, manage recovery, and reduce risk. She's here to break down what parents, coaches, and young athletes need to know to stay safe, keep playing, and ensure a full recovery when injuries do occur. So whether your child is on the soccer field, basketball court, football gridiron, or even just climbing on the playground, this episode is packed with insights that could make all the difference. After the break, we are joined on Youth Sports Playbook by Dr. Abigail Fader. Abby Fader is a fellowship-trained and licensed neuropsychologist who specializes in the assessment and treatment of concussions. Dr. Fader earned her doctoral degree in clinical psychology with a focus in neuropsychology from Central Michigan University. She completed a two-year neuropsychology fellowship at the UPMC Sports Medicine Concussion Program in Pittsburgh, which included working with recreational, high school, collegiate, and professional athletes. At the Northside Hospital Concussion Institute, she works with a multidisciplinary team to provide comprehensive evaluations and tailored treatment recommendations. While she sees concussion patients from across the lifespan, she specializes in pediatric and adolescent populations. In addition to providing patient care, Dr. Fader seeks to educate the community on concussion identification, as well as the importance of proper post-injury management. She has published numerous journal articles and book chapters and has presented her research and served as an invited lecturer at national conferences. Abby, welcome to the Youth Sports Playbook. To start, can you tell our listeners a little bit about your background and how you became interested in studying pediatric concussions?
Absolutely. So my training background is generally in neuropsychology. So this is all the study of brain behavior relationships, how our brain affects our behavior and how lots of others' behaviors affect kind of how our brain functions. And I became specifically interested in concussions because a lot of the things that we treat with neuropsychology and that we assess tended to be degenerative disorders. So think your dementia, your Alzheimer's. Well, concussions aren't fun for anyone to experience. The good thing about them is that we can treat them and people can get better with them. So they're really, really rewarding to work with. Plus, I get to work with athletes, which I think is a uniquely fun population to work with. Because they're motivated and they're happy to get back to things. So that's how I got to where I am today.
So let's start with the basics. What exactly is a concussion?
Yeah, that's always a tough one because it's such an unseen injury. It's not like a broken bone where you can see it. It's more tangible. So a lot of times it will get described as more of a brain bruise. And I think that creates a perception that there's more structural damage, so more bleeding or swelling than there really is. It's really more at this like microscopic level. So essentially, if we want to get into the nitty gritty, potassium and calcium gets kind of out of its usual ratio inside and out of the cells. And then these little cell pumps work to regulate that. What that really creates, what's more tangible for us to think about, is the brain's using more energy than it normally does. So we get this mismatch of how much energy is available versus our usual demands. So there's like an energy mismatch, an energy crisis, which is why people feel so fatigued or foggy or kind of glazed and out of it acutely after a concussion.
And what makes concussions in kids different from concussions in adults?
I think it's a lot the developmental pieces. So we're thinking about kids and teens. Everything is changing already. Their bodies are changing. Hormones are changing. Our brain development is changing. So we think there's a lot of other variables contributing, not only at the diagnosis level. So is this concussion? Is this strep? Is this stress about being behind in school? Is this worry because of a social interaction? And then with a treatment perspective, there's just a lot of demands on kids from a school, from a sport perspective. So I think that's one of the big ways that we see it. And sometimes too with diagnosis, when you're an adult, you know your body pretty well. You know, okay, I hit my head. I don't feel right here. But kids haven't experienced this before. So they hit their head and they're like, well, I guess this is just the way I feel, which is why we sometimes see a little bit delayed recognition, especially in young kids, because they just don't know how to say anything. It's not that they're necessarily hiding it. They just didn't know, oh, that's something that I should have told somebody about.
What are the most common ways kids sustain concussions in youth sports?
I see a lot of these unprotected hits. So if we think football, like the blindside hit, they don't see it coming, or some sort of unprotected fall. So obviously football, lacrosse, cheer, soccer, where you fall and you're not able to brace yourself. So think of a quarterback falling, hitting the back of their head. They're not able to catch themselves. See it a lot with cheer. The bases and the back spots gets injured more because they are the ones getting either kind of kicked or elbowed in the head on the way down.
Are those the sports where you tend to see them the most, or are there other sports as well?
Yeah, I would say we kind of look at these high contact sports. So football, rugby, lacrosse, soccer probably have a little higher rate. Cheer goes in there as well, which isn't one that people always think of. Probably a little bit lower rates in like volleyball and basketball, where contact isn't maybe the point of it or maybe an acceptable mechanism in it.
It's about a decade ago now that U.S. soccer stopped heading for kids under the age of 12. Has that made a difference in the number of concussions you've seen from soccer?
To some extent, yeah, because we know that there's one of the big things with concussion prevention is neck strengthening and using correct form. So if before age 12, it's tough to learn that and tough to have just the musculature to support doing headers. So I think we certainly can see that would result in fewer headers because, you know, we just are able to do that in older age when we can train it better. We can do the weight training that we should really be doing around this.
Is it possible for a child to have a concussion without losing consciousness?
Absolutely. We know that about maybe 10% of concussions include loss of consciousness. That being someone is completely unresponsive, eyes are closed, they're not able to respond. Whereas like another 90%, somebody takes a hit and they may fall to the ground, but they may be responsive the whole time, or they may not even fall to the ground and may continue to behave normally for a little bit.
So what are the early warning signs that parents or coaches should look for right after a hit or fall?
So those big ones, I think the ones that we always look for are, of course, loss of consciousness. But without that would be somebody falling and maybe this, like, it's called like that fencing or posturing where their arms are up in the air, they're kind of stiff. But then a lot softer things, you know, they're stumbling, they look off balance, they're running to the wrong sidelines. They're not lining up in the right spot for the next play. They're passing to the wrong team. Some of those things as well. And then in addition, more like amnesia, memory difficulties, they don't know what's coming next, are some of those things that we'd say to help us recognize it. and then maybe more of our red flag signs that would be like, hey, this is maybe more of an emergency situation, would be like repetitive vomiting, those pupils that look like they are not equal. They are really confused. They're not recognizing people. They're not recognizing where they are. And then they're really, really somnolent or losing consciousness would be just some examples of red flag signs.
And there's also symptoms that may show up hours or even day or two later, correct?
Yeah, we'd say this is an evolving injury, most commonly in those first few hours, but really could be within the first 2 days.
And what are some of the less obvious symptoms parents might miss?
Yeah, because it's such an internal injury. It's always hard for parents to know exactly what their kiddo is feeling. Some of the more subtle ones include like a nausea. This isn't always attributed to concussion. Sometimes we think about that. Lights or noises are bothering them. Mood is really irritable or more like tearful on the sidelines when that would be really unusual for them typically. Being really sleepy afterwards. And then some more of these, like they're not concentrating, they're repeating questions, would be some of the maybe a little bit more subtle things you might notice with concussion.
So if a child takes a big hit, but say they feel fine, what should a parent or coach do in that circumstance?
Yeah, I think it's always important to know is that that immediate recognition is one of the most important things, because if we think concussion is an energy crisis, our brain's using more energy. So if we're trying to play through an injury, it could take us a little bit longer, just exacerbate that energy mismatch. So I'm always a big proponent of play it conservative on the front end. Let's pull them out of play. Let's monitor them for the next, you know, period, the next quarter of whatever kind of sport that we're in, and see how they're responding. Really make it easy for them to say that, hey, I don't feel good, in a way that doesn't make them, you know, kids are always, they're trying to be tough out there. So say it's okay if you don't feel good right now.
I know a lot of high school and college sports programs do baseline testing. Are you in favor of baseline testing? And what's the earliest age someone should consider it?
Yeah, baseline testing is fantastic because we have great cognitive tools that let us look at memory, attention, speed of processing after a concussion. But if we don't have a baseline, we can compare to general norms, so other kids their age, but that doesn't always perfectly account for ADHD or being gifted or having a learning disability. But if we have a baseline, we get to say, okay, you do a baseline, you take this test, this memory speed of processing test before an injury. And then if you get injured, you take that same test again, but we look and we say, okay, you're clearly slower than you usually are. You're clearly having memory difficulties. And it just gives us a little bit more confidence with regard to diagnosing.
And what's the earliest age you would recommend baseline testing?
So with our measures, impact is one of the most commonly used tools. That there's a pediatric version that really goes down to like age 5 that you can get that done with. And then the more common kind of adolescent version, you can do really ages 10 and above. We usually say getting that done every year to every other year tends to kind of keep up with those developmental changes as well.
If a parent or coach suspects a concussion during a game or practice, what should the immediate next steps be?
I'd always say removal from play immediately. Look at them on the sidelines. Obviously, if there's an athletic trainer there, I like to have them step in, do some more sideline evaluation. That might include some specific tools, the SCAT-6, the VOMS, this vestibular and ocular motor screening, some balance testing, some different things to look at if they're oriented, how they're responding. In lieu of having an athletic trainer there, it would be maybe answering some basic orientation questions, but really like, is their onset of symptoms? Do they have a headache? Do they feel dizzy? Those kind of things. And then holding them out from play if they feel that way. If after a period of time they're feeling okay, kind of testing it out with some sideline exertion to see if they get symptoms in response to that or if they feel okay and can go back and try a little bit more.
So if somebody has potentially some symptoms and after 15 minutes or 45 minutes, those symptoms seem to have dissipated, you're okay, or the recommendation is okay to go back and play at that point?
I would say if there was a plausible mechanism of injury, meaning they got hit in the head or they got hit in the body in some way that force is transmitted to the head. So they got hit really hard in the chest, their head whipped back and forth, and they had symptoms afterwards, that would be a clear, they're not going back to play today. We want to look at this in subsequent days before putting them back out there. I think the only way that they would be able to go back to play after taking a hit like that is if everyone feels very confident that they have no symptoms and they're looking and behaving completely like their normal self. But really, we know if we play through a concussion, it can take us twice as long to recover. And then if we're just removed from play. So we've compared kids who go back to play, even if they don't take another hit after concussion, take twice as long to recover than those who come out right away. So there really isn't necessarily a downside to being pulled out of play other than it sucks to miss the game that you are in. But I always call it athlete math. If you get pulled out of play, you miss some, and it is a concussion, we're going to get you back faster than if you had tried to put your head down and just play through it.
What are the biggest mistakes you see parents or coaches make when dealing with possible concussions?
I'd say sometimes waiting it out. And there's some extent, like they were sick at the time, they had a poor night of sleep. Like it's worth it to double check and make sure that this is concussion. But holding kids, like having that happen, they feel poorly, they miss a week or two of school, and then you go see a specialist for concussion. Boy, there is a lot of things to clean up by that point. One, they're behind with schoolwork, they're stressed, they haven't had their specific kind of symptom profiles treated, they haven't gotten a treatment plan. So I'd say waiting, assuming that a wait and see approach is going to take care of it, rather than erring on the side of more active, targeted, specialized care.
So a concussion is suspected in a case. How is it actually or typically diagnosed and then treated?
Sure. So obviously we're looking, was there a way that you got hit? Did you have symptoms come on right away that aren't attributable to something else? So it wasn't just that you were dehydrated and it was hot and you felt bad because of that. We are using cognitive testing in addition to just that self-report by the athlete and their family. So we're looking at how they're doing on the memory and speed of processing. And then we're also looking at these things that are a little bit closer to objective. So ocular motor screening, how our eyes moving, responding, focusing together to see one, assessing our vestibular system, all about balance, all about processing movement, all about keeping our vision stable. That tends to be affected really commonly with concussion. And you can usually see when somebody gets dizzy or is having double vision in response to that. And that really gives us some extra tools to say, yes, this is a concussion, and now we know how to treat it too.
In the past, we often heard just rest in a dark room or even don't fall asleep. Has the recommended approach changed from that?
Yeah, I'd say a lot of those recommendations have really been flipped on their head. So the sleep recommendation, if you are not having symptoms that are making you say, wow, I really need to go to the ER, this is an emergency, and get evaluated, it's okay for kiddos to sleep after a concussion. That good night of rest after it is great. And then rest. It's always been rest, rest, rest with concussion. Some rest is good. We usually say the first 24, 48 hours, let's take it easier. But then we actually know if we start resuming a more typical routine, school, seeing friends, being on screens, that we see a quicker recovery than those who have a strict rest-based approach, those who do that cocooning and stay in a dark room.
That's very interesting. How long does a recovery usually take for a kid?
Say in that more the child and the adolescent age group, we tend to see recoveries on average more within a month.
And is there anything to deduce from a concussion that takes longer than that for someone to recover?
We have a few things that we know immediately kind of point us towards, yeah, this might be a little bit more complicated recovery. There's some pre-injury risk factors, so history of migraine, history of motion sickness, histories of some ocular motor dysfunction, particularly like amblyopia, strabismus, these lazy eye, and then more anxiety, depression, mood concerns as well. And then after an injury, more traumatic mechanisms like being involved in a car accident, and then how you're presenting with it. Higher symptom burden, so more symptoms, more severe symptoms, having a lot of dizziness, and having a lot of visual complaints tend to mean, hey, this might be a little bit longer recovery.
So what does a safe return to play progression look like?
Yeah, absolutely. So we alluded to this isn't just rest and wait it out anymore. That applies not only to kind of typical routine in school, but it also applies to physical activity. So we're still not putting kids back to contact play before they are fully cleared from a concussion. But in the meantime, we've actually done research to say some non-risk activity, so things that aren't you're not going to get hit in the head with, helps promote recovery, helps people get better faster and have fewer symptoms over their recovery. So concretely,
What would a couple of those exercises without risk be, for example?
So we would still be taking a graduated or a gradual return to play approach. So first day, you're doing some walking, you're doing some stretching. The next day, you are incorporating some more heavier cardio. You're doing a little bit more dynamic kind of circuit work, maybe some lunges, maybe some squats, that kind of thing. And then moving towards more non-contact practice. So soccer, you are shooting on a goal. You are passing with a teammate that you trust, but you're not back to scrimmaging yet. And that isn't necessarily everyone proceeds through that at the same pace. It's looking more at how do you feel during that? If you're tolerating it well, great, you can move up to that next step. But if, wow, you're really having a lot of symptoms in response to this, we're going to moderate our approach. We're going to listen to your body, and we're going to maybe move you through that a little bit more slowly.
And what risks are there if the child returns to sports too soon?
Obviously, we don't want to get hit in the head. We don't want a concussion on top of a concussion. That brain's already trying to regulate all of that energy crisis. We don't want it to get hit again while that's happening. That's when we tend to see longer recoveries with this. So yes, we are incorporating some exertion, some movement into our recovery plan. But we are not wanting contact potential. We're not wanting to play dodgeball in PE class until we are fully through a recovery. The main risks, a longer, complicated recovery. There's a very low rate of this second impact syndrome, which is maybe a more catastrophic kind of brain response to this. That's rare, but is obviously what we want to avoid.
Are there things parents and coaches and leagues can do to reduce the risk of concussions?
Absolutely. One is awareness, because concussions will occur. So teaching kids how to report when they don't feel well, leaving them the room to do that. But then reducing the concussions occurring comes from more of a training perspective. So we are using good tackling form. We are doing neck strengthening so that our neck is strong and absorbs the force instead of our head bobbling around. I've recently really been turned on to falling correctly. So if you're going to fall, you're going to brace your neck so that your neck is absorbing that fall instead of your head bobbling and then hitting the ground, which is a huge mechanism of injury that I see.
Do helmets or protective gear help prevent concussions?
Nothing will fully prevent that concussive force from being transmitted to the brain. Some equipment can reduce the amount of force that is being transmitted. But a lot of these newer things coming out, we don't have convincing research that they are necessarily reducing our rate of concussions. So while I'd love to be able to wholeheartedly say, yes, this particular piece of equipment is going to, you know, change your risk completely with this, it comes down to a lot of the harder, less glamorous things, the neck strengthening, the form, the technique.
So to that point, proper coaching plays a big role in prevention as well. Is that correct?
Yes. We look at that a lot. Coaches who encourage people to lead with the head in football, we know that that's going to bump up concussion risks. I had with one of my teams, I had like three kids from the same position come to me within a week. And I consulted with their AD, their athletic trainer. And I was like, what's going on? Why is this happening? So we know the way that that is being taught to kids, what expectations are being set, plays a huge, huge role in how kids approach this.
So over the last 10 to 15 years, what's changed in the way we understand and manage concussions?
The way that we understand them and the way that I think kids understand them has changed a lot. Obviously, we're constantly educating each new generation, each new round of kids. But I see more kids like helping out their teammate to report this. So they're telling their athletic trainer or their coach that, hey, you know, Bobby doesn't look right. I think maybe you should check on him. Whereas before, everyone was maybe kind of putting their heads down together to not necessarily hide it, but to play through it. And then the management has moved so much away from that rest and avoid and wait it out and more. Yes, we're going to listen to our bodies. We're not going to push too hard, but we can have a much more moderated approach, a much earlier return to school, and incorporating active treatment, targeted treatment. So for vestibular problems, dizzy problems, we can give you home exercises and physical therapy. We don't have to just wait it out until it goes away.
And what's the one thing you wish every youth sports parent understood about concussions?
They're very real. They're hard to see. A lot of times, sometimes you wish you could put a cast on a kid's head so that people could see, yeah, you're still not feeling well with this. So what they're feeling is very real. But the second piece is the way that we approach our management of it is so key. It's got to be finding this balance between accommodating them, but not amping up the stress regarding our return to school, regarding our return to sports. Too much pressure, you have to get back to testing, you have to get back to games right away, creates problems. But also, let's keep you out of school for 2 weeks and let's keep you isolated from everyone for 2 weeks. Boy, that creates a whole different kind of stress. So finding this really this sweet spot, but where we're moderating our approach to symptoms and our return to activity.
And what message would you give to young athletes about speaking up if they don't feel right after a hit?
One, I call it my athlete math again. If you play through an injury, you are going to take longer to recover. You are going to feel bad for longer. You're going to be performing at a lower level for longer than if you just tell someone right away after that hit happens, right after you recognize you don't feel right. We will be able to get you back to play faster. We're going to make sure you're healthy. We're going to make sure you're safe. But we want to work with you to get you back faster. So if you recognize it, you tell someone right away when you feel bad.
And finally, the last question that I ask every guest who's on the Youth Sports Playbook, what is your favorite sports movie?
Oh, man. You know, I like The Sandlot. I don't know if that's a very common response to this one, but I like that element of just let's keeping the fun in sports and let's have this be a community-based thing that helps us meet our neighbors, helps us meet other kids, helps us learn how to play together.
Well, you were the second person to say The Sandlot, so another great choice of sports movies. Dr. Abby Fader, I want to thank you so much for being a guest today on the Youth Sports Playbook. And hopefully down the road, as you get more information and research, we can have you back on again.
Absolutely. Thank you so very much for having me on today. Awareness about this is really one of the most important things that we can have. So I appreciate being able to get the messages out there.
That's going to do it for this episode of Youth Sports Playbook. A big thank you to Dr. Abigail Fader for sharing her expertise and helping us better understand how to recognize, treat, and prevent concussions in young athletes. If there's one takeaway from today, it's this. When it comes to head injuries, it's always better to be cautious. Listening to our kids, recognizing the signs, and giving them the time and care they need to fully recover isn't just important, it's essential. Youth sports are supposed to be fun, positive, and enriching experiences, and keeping our kids safe is a huge part of that. The more informed we are as parents and coaches, the better we can support them both on and off the field. If you're enjoying the podcast and want to hear more, please take a moment to like, follow, or subscribe on the platform you're listening on. It really helps us grow and reach more families who care about making youth sports a positive experience for kids. And as always, we'd love to hear from you. You can send your questions, comments, or topic ideas to youthsportsplaybook@gmail.com. Thanks for listening. I'm your host, Jeffrey Bernstein, and we'll see you next time on Youth Sports Playbook.
Big smiles, bright skies, it's a brand new day. Kick it, toss it, jump up high. Give it your best, reach for the sky. This is the Youth Sports Playbook. Having fun is all it took. Run, laugh, learn, and grow. Every step helps you glow. Every run, it's all about having fun. Try your best, give it a go. Feel the joy, let it show. This is the Youth Sports Playbook. Having fun is all it took. Run, laugh, learn, grow. Every step helps you glow. This is the Youth Sports.